Before we dive in with our super amazing deadly guest all the way from Iceland, I just want to stop and say a few words about our show's amazing sponsor who have kept supporting us through one of the most difficult financial years I've ever had, anybody else has ever had. The 2020 sponsors deserve a very special shout out. Thank you, AcuSonus, for being 100% on my side and helping deliver just the highest quality podcast I possibly can produce in the short amount of time I do have. And if you've got a short amount of time, all you need is their software, man. With a simple turn of a dial, you can make your audio sound super crisp. They have a reverberator to take out room echo. They have a voice leveler so that when you're interviewing someone, your voice and theirs can match up easily. Heh, they even got a noise removal system. With a turn of a knob, you can sound like you're in a studio, when in reality, you might be hanging out in your car outside the mall waiting for your wife to finish shopping. Or husband. You know, this is 2020. Anyway, guys, check out AcuSonus. A link down in the description down below of this show will be available to you. You can go in and check out their website. They're worth every single penny. And AcuSonus, thank you so very much for continuing to support the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Thank you, guys. Welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Tonight's guest lives in Illinois, and several of her books focus on the magnificently haunted Peoria State Hospital, one of the most active sites in the state. This abandoned mental asylum was at one time the premier facility for the treatment of mental illness in the world. But get this, according to her and some other people, the spirits are here because of the compassionate treatment they got, which is a refreshing change from the horror stories of most mental asylums. The spirits are here because it's a place of fond memories for them. She's made over 100 appearances on various radio and TV shows, including a spot on Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters in the episode Prescription for Fear about the Peoria State Hospital. Guys, tonight's guest is Sylvia Schultz. Sylvia, how you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic, John. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, and it's so great to have a fellow paranormal investigator on the show. Believe it or not, I've just had a lot of light workers and psychics and Bigfoot researchers. It's just been a while since I had a good old-fashioned ghost hunter, baby, and I'm so glad to have you on. Thank you for taking the time.
I'm here for you, man.
I got to ask the obvious questions, of course, you know, first and foremost, how you holding out during this pandemic? Is everything okay in your neck of the woods?
So I'm doing all right. I work at a public library, and just this week we had to close the building to patrons coming in to get books and DVDs and whatnot. But we still are open for people to pick up material. We have a drive-through. We're lucky to have that. And people are still able to get their materials. So I'm really happy that we're continuing to serve the public.
I think this is a very interesting time. You are seeing people who have just been the trendy atheist type people who are suddenly getting very interested in anything at all that will take their mind off. Well, that's perceived as reality. So suddenly everyone's into horror movies. Everyone can't wait to like watch the next episode of their favorite paranormal investigation show and stuff. We and you are living in a resurgence time. Finally, this will all swing back around. And there's actually been a very large spike in paranormal activity over the last 6 months. So I'm so glad that, yeah, this has been kind of going on. And I'm so glad to have someone like you on right now who's in the United States. One of the most hardest hit places on the planet with COVID-19. And, you know, it's a very humbling thing to see everybody out there and they're still doing quite well. Enough of that beside, it's time for us to move on to my first question for you. Like I said earlier, you are a fellow paranormal investigator such as myself. You have been doing this for quite some time. And I got to ask the most loaded question you can ever ask a paranormal investigator. What got you into being a paranormal investigator? So tell me about your first ever paranormal investigation.
Okay, well, I had a group of friends that we tried to go on investigations, but we really couldn't put anything together. But we did enjoy going on ghost tours. So one evening in October, several years ago, we went on a tour in Macomb, Illinois, about 45 minutes west of here. And we did a little walking tour of the town and visited several places. The first place we visited was the Little Stitches Sewing Shop on the square in Macomb. And we all had our separate jobs to do on our little team. Ursula did the video recording, and Sherry was very good at snapping pictures at the right time. And I was in charge of the audio recording. I was pretty good at catching EVPs. So we were on this tour, and we went into a back room where a lot of the sewing stuff was stored. And milled around there for a little while. Then everybody filed out except the guide and myself and Sherry. And the guide said, well, hold on a minute. I think I heard some hangers rattling in the corner there. Let's stay here for a little while. So Sherry and I are standing there. Sherry's snapping pictures. I'm standing there with my recorder in my left hand and my flashlight in my right hand, and we're dark. And all of a sudden, from my left, I hear somebody fart. And it's not some pant-shredding blast or anything like that. It's this tiny, polite little poot. Now, I have the sense of humor of a 10-year-old boy. So the first thing I did was snicker uncontrollably. Somebody cut one. And all right, pull yourself together. You're big, bad ghost hunter now, and you're not going to come unglued just because somebody cut the cheese. All right, so we finished taking the pictures, and we decide to join the rest of the group. And I turn my flashlight on so we can find our way back, and just out of idle curiosity, I swing my flashlight to the left to see who it was that let one slip. And that's when I realized that not only was no one standing next to me, I was standing next to a solid wall. And I said, I think people need to know about this, because you're a paranormal investigator. You know, that's what you do. Something weird happens, you share it with the group. So we walk into the front room where everyone else is, and I said, okay, I know everyone's going to laugh at me. I'm okay with that, but this is what I heard. Everyone is rolling on the floor laughing. Oh, right, you heard a ghost fart. Oh, I'm so sure, whatever. And I said, I stand by my experience. This is what I heard. So that was Saturday night. We drove home, and I handed my recorder to Gail, who was our tech person. And Sunday morning, she sends me a text. She goes, I found your ghost fart on the tape. I said, I told you so. Sunday afternoon, she sends me an email. And she's not laughing quite so hard now. She says, you have to listen to this. So she sent me two sound files. So I play the first file. Poof. I play the second file. Hello? She slowed it down.
Ah, interesting.
And caught someone saying hello.
And you actually heard it in real time, which is a rarity. Wow, you got lucky in your first adventure.
Yeah, it was amazing. And at first, being a little baby ghost hunter, I said, oh my goodness, I can never go back to that place again. I know for a fact it's haunted. Somebody talked to me. And then I got to thinking about it, and I said to myself, here's someone who wanted to communicate with us so badly that not only did they make a sound that was captured on my recorder and slowed down and it said hello, it made a sound that I heard with my naked ear, and that takes some doing. That's somebody who really wants to communicate.
And to be quite honest with you, it's also a very, very rare thing to have happen. Very rarely do we capture a good quality EVP, let alone one that's in the vicinity with you, and that's kind of saying hello to you, that you hear in real time. That may have happened to me maybe once or twice in the 6 or 7 years I've done it. So good on you. I think that's enough to get anybody hooked.
<Thank you.
laughs> Great origin story. It doesn't stink as much as you think it would. Ba-dum-ts. And I think that's actually a really cool way of getting into the paranormal, because so many people go out there and they do this and they don't realize how much work is behind all this. Like you say, you're an EVP person, so am I. So they don't realize that when you have 10 recorders on one house and each one of them running for 10 hours, that's 100 hours of audio you got to go over.
Yep.
Not to mention the 6 or 7 hours you spend on one sound saying, is this something? Is this really something? Could this be something? Hey, everybody, I know. Is this something?
15, 20, 25 times. Yes.
And, you know, I always make the joke, right? You know, life was hard as a spirit, as an EVP researcher. Life was always hard for me. But then it got really hard as soon as I started getting into the spirit box because, my God, my ears would bleed. Anyway, let's talk.
I know how you feel.
But, you know, it's that one thing you always capture, you know, that just makes it so worthwhile. And, you know.
Oh, my God, yes.
Some people are trophy hunters. Me, I'm more of the trying to prove the skeptics wrong kind of guy. And then that's always a bad way to be in this. Personally, I wish I never went down that path, but I just can't help myself because I got into this as a freaking atheist and not leaving as one. Which brings me to the next question. So here we go. What do you think a ghost actually is, or a haunting actually is? Because there's so many people out there who've got ideas of what a haunted house might be. You know, they talk about various kinds of paranormal phenomena. You know, are they all ghost related, or are they their own thing? What do you think is going on there?
Well, I am of the school that thinks that there are different reasons for different hauntings. And places can be haunted in different ways. I have personally run across residual hauntings. I have personally run across very, very intelligent hauntings. And I've run across places where it's not necessarily an actual haunting, but just the energy of a place. I was at the Villisca Axe Murder House. And I was very privileged to spend 45 minutes there by myself before everyone else got there. And I also spent the night there by myself. So that was really amazing. And the energy I got, I am not by any means a sensitive. I'm getting better at experiencing the energy of a place. I can't hear spirits usually. I usually can't see them, but I'm getting better at sensing the energy of a place. And with the Villisca Axe Murder House, that evening, I slept on the floor with no trouble at all. Nothing. The only reason I woke up so many times was because the air conditioner kept going off. But other than that, I just had this feeling of peace, which is weird to say. But I could feel that this was a house where four children were being raised. This was a house filled with love and happiness and acceptance and cheer. And that's what I got that evening and that night. But then the next morning, I was in the house alone again. And there was a picture that I meant to get, and I'd forgotten to get that particular picture. So I went back into the house by myself and went upstairs. And the energy that I got the next morning was much different. The murders were discovered in early morning. And I think that's what the house was remembering. Oh, it's early morning. This is when the murders were discovered. And the energy in the house in the morning is very, very different than it is in the evening. It's fascinating.
It's interesting that, you know, in different locations, like one of the things I wrote about in my book were the stimuli for a haunting. It's my belief that the entire world is haunted. It just takes the right stimuli to bring it out in certain locations. The idea that there's an extra dimension of space running parallel to ours where this stuff resides and we just get the end result. So, for instance, there's a murder on location. All that energy is caught there. And for anybody who's wondering what the heck I'm talking about when I say energy, like I'm talking about when two people get in a heated argument in a room and then they leave the room and you still feel the tension in the air, it's that kind of energy. It's the same idea. There's a big murder.
Oh, I agree.
Something crazy happens in there. And then all of a sudden, this place now has spiritual activity going on there. And but it's not just, you know, traumatic stuff that goes on either. It seems to me like the residual hauntings, people talk about it being a recording on an area. It really does appear to be that way. Can you think of any residual hauntings that just really, really blow your mind that you've kind of come across multiple times? Have you ever experienced it more than once?
Yeah. Well, About 7 or 8 years ago, my husband and I owned a bar here in Pekin. And this bar that we bought was haunted to the rafters. We had several psychic mediums in at different times. And one of them said, there is just layer upon layer upon layer of time and spirits here. And some of them interact with each other, and some of them move through this space not interacting because they're unaware of the other spirits. It's just different layers. And one of these was a residual haunting. It was very interesting because it was, there was a love triangle. And the woman's husband caught her with her lover and didn't kill the lover, but beat the paste out of him. There was one area in the kitchen where this happened before it was a bar. And even somebody who is about as sensitive as a brick, myself, every time I went back to that particular area of the kitchen, it just felt, the energy felt off. It just felt like a funhouse tilt to it. No murder involved, just a lot of violence. And one of the psychic mediums that we had come in told us about this. And then a different psychic medium said that there was an apartment room very close to where this beating happened, and the woman was still there. She said there's a bed, and the woman sits on the bed, and every once in a while she'll go over to the window and look out the window, and then she'll come back to the bed. She said, I tried to talk to her. I tried to tell her that she was free to go now, and she just ignored me. She just did not listen to me at all. So that was a really interesting residual haunting. I feel so bad for that woman.
You know, it's here's the wild thing about it. Like, I've always found, like, when I'm out investigating that, you know, I gave up doing the classic, is there anybody there stuff. Like, I just don't do that anymore. Now I, like, sit down, I crack a beer, and I slide across the kitchen table and, like, pull out the chair and put the recorder there and say, come over, have a beer with me and talk to me. let's see what can really come out of here, right? It's the idea that no more of this, you know, trying to play ghost hunter stuff. And it's interesting that you said that when you described yourself in your original paranormal investigator, you said a baby investigator. I thought that was so what a great way to describe yourself. You're just a baby just starting out. But now that you've gotten older and wiser, so to speak, how many years has it been, Sylvia?
I have been doing this for 10 years.
Wow. Well,
I call it 11 because my first book was published 10 years ago and I was working on that. So, yeah, 11 years.
Wow. So here we are 11 years later and we've investigated all these places and we our approach changes big time. It's like,
yeah,
and also you can't go in with the childlike eyes either anymore. It's like you go into these places and it's like, oh God, I could just tell this place is going to be a shit show. Or you go into another place. I'd rather a shit show though than a boring show. Oh God. To sit in a place for 8 hours and get nothing, I'd rather have my hair scared off my head.
That's way better than being bored. You mentioned having a beer. Now, this is interesting. When I was with a team last summer, one of the places we went to was Casey Cemetery. Now, the lore of this cemetery is that there are a lot of children buried there. And, you know, kids like candy, so I brought a pocket full of Swedish fish. And that's what I did. The first thing I did when I got there was I didn't know who it was that was buried there, but I went to the big stone that said Casey Cemetery, and I put a handful of Swedish fish on the stone, and I said, there you go. There's some candy for you, and I know you're all polite little children, and when someone gives you a piece of candy, you say thank you. And I haven't gone over the tapes yet to see if anyone did say thank you, but so I'm hoping they did. But
be awesome if they said trick or treat. Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be very, very cool. Several weeks later, I was talking with a dear friend of mine who is a very powerful psychic medium, and she was doing a spirit box session, and she caught a question Someone asked, was it you who put the candy on the gravestone? And she said, no, that was my dear friend Sylvia that did that. So,
so there you go, right? Just goes to show you that, you know, one thing leads to another here on the Odd the Newfoundland. There's no doubt. And, you know, here comes the cool thing. Look, here I'm getting Sylvia Schultz on my show, and I had no idea that you're a bona fide paranormal celeb now. I didn't know that you were on Ghost Hunters. I read down through, I was like, what the heck?
I'm so pleased to hear that.
I was like, what the heck? You were on Ghost Hunters? I'm like, why did I have you on for Halloween? I feel like such a fail. And then I look back and here you've got a book out about creepy Christmas stories. I'm like, oh, for God's sake, why do I have you on January 1st? Makes no damn sense. But anyway, I digress.
Well, you know, John, Christmas is evergreen, so you just have me on for your Christmas show next year, and well, that'll be fine.
You know what? It's great to already have a guest book, and hey, you're out January 1st. It's still the season when this show drops, so there you go.
Sure.
Sci-Fi's Ghost Hunters in the episode Prescription for Fear about the Peoria State Hospital is the one that you actually appeared on. So I never seen the episode. Tell me exactly what your part is on the show. Because some people are on these shows, but just talking about the location, they never ever investigate anybody. Did you actually get a chance to investigate with the guys and gals from TAPS?
I did not. I was hoping I could get the chance, but they did their investigation on Thursday night, and they interviewed me on Friday. So that just really didn't happen at all.
Gotcha.
I was disappointed. I'm like, man, I'd sure like to investigate with everybody, but no, it didn't happen. And blink and you'll miss me, but yeah, I got to be on the show, and it was funny because they did a lot of creative editing. I was watching it in the basement with my husband on the couch, and I'm pounding the arm of the couch going, that's not what I said. That's not what, okay, it's what I said, but it's not everything that I said. They're reading so much out, but I understand it's for entertainment purposes, but there, I told them so many things about the history, and they left a lot of it out, which did not please me. But like I said, they're on a time schedule. They're on a time crunch. But
I could see it now. You're like talking. I could see it now. You're like talking about this building. Yes, the spirits here are just lovely and so nice. And they edited it out. The spirits are here.
Yes, that's just about exactly what happened. Because in the building that they investigated, which unfortunately was torn down a couple summers ago, there was a ghost called the White Lady, and you know, castles in Europe and everything, everybody has their own white lady. We're lucky because we have at least three white ladies on the asylum campus and possibly as many as six. But the Bowen building had a white lady spirit. And people had seen her, and she looked kind of threatening. She would kind of stare, glower at people. Some people found her to be threatening. But I explained the history of this place. It was the white lady in the Bowen building may have been Dr. Zeller's wife, Sophie, and she is not threatening at all. She's a very powerful personality, which is why people might perceive her as threatening. But that's where they stopped it. People see her as threatening. Boom, end of story.
Well, you know, as a paranormal investigator yourself, it's very difficult to entertain people with what we do. People glorify the ghost hunt thing. Look, guys, listen, if you've never gone on a paranormal investigation before, can I just tell you that it's very intense. It can be very intense at times, like if something's happening in the moment. But, like, that might last for 30 seconds out of 18, 20 hours.
Most of it is waiting.
Most of it is waiting around, freezing to death, wondering if the person who gave you permission for the building is going to mind that you broke this or that. And you talked about Faraday on your first investigation. There's always somebody who grabs the flare clamber, man, and starts playing with that thing. And, you know, you haven't lived till you've seen a fart through a flare lens. But anyway, I digress. You didn't get a chance to work with the TAPS team. They totally just misconstrued what you said. I mean, that's not a very good impression. But at the same time, it is a TV show. We both know that you didn't write books. to make people, shall we say, watch TV. You wrote books to inform people about this haunting, about this hospital that has so many things going on in it. But, you know, one of the very interesting things about your description about this place is that the ghosts there aren't necessarily nasty or mean or mean-spirited, which is just a funny way of saying, you know, they're out to get you. They're more like out to just hang out with you. And you've kind of talked about some of the spirits there. Why don't you talk to me about some of the spirits that you've come across there, you know, whatever nickname you might have given them or whatever name that I came across, and tell me about some of the stuff that goes on.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a really good one. There is a spirit in the Pollock Hospital, which is the tuberculosis ward. And we have nicknamed him Heavy Boots. He's one of the spirits that do kind of try to scare people. And this is, he has a good reason for it. He likes to thunder down the hallway and try to get a rise out of you. There was somebody who was the Pollock Hospital does a haunted house every year. And there was somebody who was turning out the lights in the hallways. And she knew about this spirit. She knew about Heavy Boots. And there was a light bulb that was inside a barrel to give ambiance. And she reached down into the barrel and unscrewed the light bulb. And all of a sudden, she heard big, heavy, intimidating footsteps coming towards her. And she was like, okay, do I run for safety? Or do I reach back inside the dark barrel and screw the light bulb in? What do I do? And the footsteps kept getting closer and closer and closer. And she finally, her nerve broke, and she just booked it down the hallway. And the person in charge of the haunt saw her running past, and she just turned her head and said, Heavy Boots, and kept on going. So,
isn't it interesting?
This is one of the times.
Isn't it interesting that very rarely do we see the feet or the boots making the noise, but we always get the sound of it. So, you know, as an EVP researcher to you, I just tell people, you know, it's an emergent phenomena. It's coming from somewhere else, and that's why we're getting those sounds. And this person,
right?
Like, you got to realize what you're dealing with. In an insane asylum. This is probably an insane person who's, I like to think, if it truly is a piece of your consciousness that survives death, it's probably still insane wherever they're to, and it's probably stomping up the halls having a great time.
Absolutely, yes. Now, this is somebody who was at the asylum, and that's what I was going to say. Some ghosts, like Heavy Boots, like to scare people because they get energy from our feelings. And that's one of the most powerful feelings there is fear. I mean, you've never heard of somebody peeing their pants when they're sad. They pee their pants because they're scared. So that's a really powerful emotion. So this is a place and an incident where the history informs the fact of the haunting. Now, in the 1950s, there were two young men in the tuberculosis ward. The tuberculosis ward was divided into the men's ward and women's ward. And these two guys were in the tuberculosis hospital. They had picked up mild cases, but they were being cared for in the hospital. They had each gotten to the asylum about 3 years before. So, yes, they were in there for mental issues. Now, their names were James Sparr and Jesse Bonham. The thing about Heavy Boots is that he is most often experienced at night, late at night. And the Peoria State Hospital was a working hospital. They had staff on call and on duty 24/7, even over the overnight shift. So they were caring for patients overnight. And the tuberculosis ward was staffed at all hours of the day and all hours of the night. So one night, James Sparr came barreling up behind Jesse Bonham and, for reasons known only to himself, thwacked Jesse right behind, right over the back with a broomstick. Just for the heck of it. And Jesse was understandably annoyed at this unprovoked attack. So he picked up a floor polisher and beat the living crap out of James with it. Beat him to death. With a floor polisher.
Hmm.
So here we have an attack in the wee hours of the night. An attack that ends in a violent beating death. And these were both young men. Jesse was only 25, and James, the guy who got killed, was 33. So James's spirit probably died with a lot of unresolved issues. He was just having fun. He didn't expect to be beaten to death with a floor polisher moments later. So he's got a lot of baggage. So that's why he goes around trying to scare people, trying to get a rise out of them. So he's a very menacing spirit, but that's the way he was in life. So that's the way he is in death, too. He's still trying to get a rise out of people.
Do you think they're watching us like some kind of strange reality TV show? I always have this question for people who investigate. You know, like, do you ever think that this is like the episode of The Real World? Like, they're just watching us eating popcorn. And sometimes when we, you know, get their EVP, they're just commenting on their favorite show. Like, do you think that might be what it is?
Oh, yes. Oh, definitely. There is a spirit in the basement of the Pollock Hospital who is very fond of me. His name is Chris. He is 22 years. He died when he was 22. And he says the last year he remembers is 1905. And with the help of a psychic medium, we have discovered that I remind him of his sister. So he is very, very taken with me. So we've had a lot of good conversations with the help of the psychic medium. During the COVID shutdown, I took my dog out to the Peoria State Hospital grounds, and I couldn't get inside the Pollock Hospital, of course, but I sat with my dog next to the Pollock Hospital and invited Chris to come out and talk with me, and had my recorder going and the spirit box going. And yeah, we got a couple good spirit box responses from him. And I said, did you have a dog? And he grew up on a farm in Indiana. And he said, yeah, we sure did. So, yeah, they interact. They like to see what we're doing. And they have people that they get, I'm going to say they get attached to, and that's kind of the wrong phrasing, because that brings to mind spirit attachments and whatnot. But they have people that they're fond of. And I think that's wonderful.
I want to be every ghost's favorite investigator. So when I go home and listen to my recorder, there's just like 100 different ghosts on it, and they all love me. But unfortunately, that's not always the case. Sometimes we get those spirits, like you mentioned before, that are, shall we say, not the nicest characters. Have you ever run into any spirits that aren't the nicest characters, that are kind of, well, for lack of a better word, evil?
I've been really lucky. I have not run into anything like that. I've spent a lot of time at the Peoria State Hospital. The spirits there have gotten used to me. I have explored other places, but I've been really lucky. I have not run across anything that's really evil or really threatening.
That's great. I mean, I can agree there too. I've never come across anything that's really scary, so to speak. But then again, I think it's all in the approach and the person who's investigating. You know what I mean? Like, if you were out there doing the whole provoking thing with some kind of weird demonic chants going on, you're probably going to get, you know, not some dude banging his boots. You might have some guy show up who's on fire. So there you go.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. I do not provoke. I'll speak a little. If there's a spirit that I know is going to tend to be belligerent, there's a spirit down in the basement of the Pollock again, who he likes his privacy. And sometimes he can bully investigators to get them out of the basement. And when I go down there, I just let him know that I'm not going to take any guff from him. and just say, you know, you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone, and we'll be fine. So, yeah, I don't provoke. I just lay down the law. I said, you're not going to scare me. You're not going to bully me into leaving. And that's that.
You know, there's one type of haunting that always creeps me out the most, and that's when you have the kids. So when you were talking about the candies earlier, I was kind of like, oh, God. Like the kids, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just who I am. I am a foster parent by trade. It's what I do. I look after mentally handicapped and physically handicapped kids. It's just what I do. But I think that's why it kind of hits the soft spot where it's, oh, God, ghost kids really actually creep me out. Like to the point where if I'm on an investigation and a place is haunted by a child, I usually pass that up. I'm not kidding. Like, I don't want nothing to do with it. I just, it's too close to home. Give me old crazy axe murderer people any day. Give me the haunted birds. That. Hookers. I love talking to hookers. They're my favorite ghosts. Like, bring them on. Especially the pirate hookers. They're awesome. But the idea
I can understand that. I don't have children myself, so.
Yeah.
Yes, child ghosts are unsettling for sure, because that's probably when they died, is when they were a child. That's how they manifest. I was in the basement of the old soldiers, no, the soldiers' orphanage in Gettysburg. And the story behind that is that the first matron of the orphanage was wonderful. It was her children who were the first kids who were at the orphanage because their father was killed in the Civil War. But the second matron was really horrible. She would chain kids to walls and just really abuse them. And there was a part of the basement where she would lock them in the total darkness and just leave them there for hours and hours with no respite and no food. So that's kind of a hot spot in that building. And me, I'm the person who throws herself into any situation there is. So I went into that crawl space and I had a couple of Swedish fish in my pocket and I pulled them out and I held them in my hand and said, I'm really sorry for what happened to you in this room. And I hope that you've been able to move past it. And here's some kindness for you and here's some candy for you. And I hope you've found peace afterwards. So,
you know, I just watched this. Like, I hate to talk about more emotional kids' death things. Like, I got to stop this before I just lose it all together. I'll be off my even keel soon, Sylvia. I really will. But did you ever see that movie Coco? Did you ever see a Disney movie?
Talking about crazy people.
Have you ever seen a movie Coco? The Disney movie.
Have I ever seen?
The Disney movie called Coco. The one where they go to the land of the dead. It's a Mexican, you know, Day of the Dead. Have you seen this movie yet?
I'm familiar with it. I have not seen it, but we have it at the library. Okay.
You need to see this movie. You need to see this movie. It's okay. It's awesome. You need to see this. I think it should be part of any ghost hunter's ghost hunting field guide. You need to see this Disney movie. Uh-huh. Much better than the actual Ghostbusters movie. 100% sure. Guys, tonight's guest has been Sylvia Schultz. You can check out her work at sylviaschultz.wordpress.com. Sylvia is also an author. She has a couple of books. I'm going to give her a chance to plug a couple of them right now, in particular your Christmas book and, of course, the one about the Peoria State Hospital. So let's hear about
it. Absolutely. Okay, so as far as the Christmas book goes, I do have a book called Spirits of Christmas, The Dark Side of the Holidays, and that is a wonderful collection of over 120 true ghost stories about Christmas and winter and December and the depths of the cold season. So that's a bunch of fun. You can find that on Amazon. You can also find all of my books on bookshop.org. And for the Peoria State Hospital, I have several books on that subject. I've got Fractured Spirits, Hauntings at the Peoria State Hospital. And when people didn't stop having experiences when I typed the end, and I collected more stories over the next several years after that book was published, and I soon had enough stories for a second book called Fractured Souls. So those two kind of go hand in hand. There's also a book called 44 Years in Darkness, which is about one of the patients at the Peoria State Hospital, a woman named Rhoda Derry.
Talk to me a little tiny bit more about that ghost, that haunting Christmas one. I want to hear more about that. Okay, so maybe before, since it's January 1st and the Christmas season's going to be over really soon, but Old Christmas Day isn't here yet. So you know what? Go ahead. Tell me, give me the chicken soup for the soul version of one of those short stories in there.
Oh boy. Well, how much time do we have?
You got about 5 minutes.
Ooh. Okay. All right. One of my favorite stories is The Wreck of the General Arnold. This was a ship that wrecked on the beach outside of Plymouth, Massachusetts on Christmas Eve, 1778. They washed up on a sandbar and the tide started going out and a winter storm hit. There was rain and sleet and snow coming down and the men were really suffering. The captain ordered all the men below decks for shelter, and then the weight of the ship not being supported by the water, since they were on a sandbar, started settling, and the wind started coming through the cracks in the boat. So he ordered everybody up above decks, and the men started freezing. And they decided to take the bodies of their fellow sailors and build a windbreak. And that's what they did. They sheltered behind the bodies of these fellow sailors who had died. The storm raged for 3 days, and the people in Plymouth could see that there was a boat in distress out in the harbor, but they couldn't do anything about it. The storm was too fierce to go out and help them at all. And on the night of the second day, they basically piled up ice floes and made a bridge out to the General Arnold. And when the storm finally abated, they had to walk across this ice bridge from the land out to the ship. There were sailors still alive, so they brought them back and warmed them up and took care of them. But a lot of these sailors, of course, had died. Now, the people of Plymouth knew that they had to show respect to these bodies. So they said, well, we'll bring them in and we'll put them in the biggest building in town, which happened to be the courthouse. And this burying ground is right behind the courthouse up the hill. So they discovered when they got these bodies to the courthouse that they had a problem. The bodies had frozen into this mass of clothing and flesh and ice. And they could not get the bodies apart. They couldn't fit this big chunk of humanity through the door of the courthouse. So there was a little freshwater stream that ran behind the courthouse, and they put the chunk of bodies in this freshwater stream. And I can only hope they got their water upstream
for
several days, because that's how they thawed the bodies out.
Oh my God.
By letting this fresh water run over them. So they got the bodies unfrozen, and they laid them out on the courthouse floor. And the fluids, the blood and the body fluid soaked into the wood, and it is still there. They had to turn the wood They had to turn the planks over when they redid the floor because they were just saturated with body fluids. Now, when they were thawing these bodies out, there was a fellow watching over the process, and he saw the body of the cabin boy. And he said, oh, my goodness, here's this young cabin boy, about 12 years old. And, oh, what a shame that he died. And he was watching this cabin boy, and all of a sudden he realized that there was a tear trickling down the cabin boy's cheek. And then he blinked. He was still alive.
Oh.
So they rescued him. They warmed him up as quickly as they could and got him out of the press of frozen bodies. And he survived. He survived that. He lost both of his legs below the knee, but he survived. And he lived until he was in his early 50s. And he wrote a memoir of his experiences. And he said, as painful as losing my legs was, it was nothing compared to the pain of being thawed out.
I can't imagine what that must feel like. Oh, boy, there's your creepy story. So how does this turn into a ghost story? Like, it's just something creepy.
How does it turn into a ghost story? The courthouse is extremely haunted because of the fluids that soaked into there.
Interesting.
The captain had picked up a lot of his sailors in Boston right before they sailed, and he didn't have time to enter their names in the logbook. So a lot of these guys were John Doe's. Some of the bodies were claimed by relatives, but after a couple of weeks, they still had a lot of unclaimed bodies. So the people of Plymouth took them up the hill to the burying ground, and they had dug a pit for their garbage, a midden pit. And they decided, well, we have to bury these folks somewhere. They placed these bodies with all due respect into this pit that they had dug and buried them all there. And when the captain himself died in 1801, I believe it was, he requested that he be buried with his soldiers.
Wow.
Now, since the fluids soaked into the wood, it left a powerful psychic imprint. People have captured faces looking out of the windows of the courthouse in Plymouth. It is now a museum. So it's still set up as a courthouse on the second floor, and then the first floor is set up with a museum with the artifacts and this displays around the edges of the room. But they put in indoor plumbing sometime in the last century. But they put it in the basement of the building. You have to go outside the museum and go around the building and enter in the basement to get to the restroom. So, which means the entire building is above you if you're in the bathroom. And if you are in the restroom and you listen carefully, above you, you will hear thump, drag, thump, drag. And that is the residual sound of people putting bodies down on the floor and dragging them into rows.
Oh, God. Guys, her name is Sylvia Schultz. Check her out, www.sylviaschultz.wordpress.com. Try to find that episode of Ghost Hunters Prescription for Fear. And Sylvia, have yourself a wonderful night. Thanks so much for being a guest on the Odd Newfoundland.
Thank you for having me, John. It was a pleasure.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular parajoke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.